Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk with politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference, or just trying to make life in the rural city more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes or Stitcher. Today I talk to Scott Thompson, the new artistic director for the Guelph Jazz Festival. This is Thompson's rookie year as the Jazz Festival's head programmer, and not only does he have some big shoes to fill, but he's got to juggle the massive weight of expectation for a yearly event that has delighted local, national, and international fans and critics for nearly 25 years. Learning what the Jazz Festival is all about is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. This is a big year for the Jazz Festival, one of the preeminent festivals of its kind in North America, if not the world. The Royal City's annual celebration of creative music saw a change at the top in 2017 with founding artistic director Ajay Hebley retiring from his responsibilities and Thompson coming aboard as the new artistic director earlier this year. Like Hebley, Thompson has a background with the University of Guelph, graduating with both a BA and an MA from the School of English and Theater Studies. His career has taken him many places and through many different platforms for music and performance, including as founder and director of Somewhere There, an influential venue for innovative jazz in Toronto, and as one of the founders of AIM, the Association of Improvising Musicians Toronto. Himself an accomplished trombonist, Thompson has performed with many well-known, well, in jazz circles anyway, Canadian and international artists such as Jean Durome, Laurie Friedman, William Parker, and the late Ken Aldcroft. Recently, he was part of The Share, a site-specific piece for roughly 75 amateur and professional musicians and dancers that was performed in Guelph's Exhibition Park in 2012. So he clearly has the credentials, but can he give Guelph jazz fans what they've come to expect while at the same time giving them something a little bit different? That's one of the questions I tackle with Thompson on this week's podcast. As I said at the top, Thompson's got some big shoes to fill. Hebley has been more or less synonymous with the festival, and Thompson knows that there's going to be a lot of pressure on him for this first one, though he looks to be handling it well. Along with expectations, I talked to Thompson about the job as artistic director, how he plans on leaving his mark with the festival, his background, as well as his background with CFRU, and his first experiences using Twitter to help promote the festival. If you've never been to the Jazz Festival or are curious about the world of improvised music and modern jazz, there's some discussion about that too, which admittedly pushed this podcast a little bit longer than the ordinary. But if you want to know why the Guelph Jazz Festival is so important to the art form, at least from the point of view of the novice, this is probably the podcast you want to listen to. So I caught up with Scott Thompson earlier this month in studio. So Scott Thompson, thank you for joining me today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Adam.
So to introduce yourself, maybe just talk about, you know, your background and how you got from there to being the artistic director of the festival.
Well, there is my history in Guelph. Mm-hmm. I went to school here, did my BA and MA here, and lived here off and on for about a decade, till about the mid-2000s. Mm-hmm. And during that time, I got interested in music, and in particular in creative improvised music. That led me to not only play and compose, which is something that I do professionally, but also to book shows in downtown Guelph, do a bit of journalism. I did some radio at CFRU. Started as a jazz program, but quickly became whatever I was listening to that week program. In the mid-2000s, I moved to Toronto and got actively involved in the local field of creative improvised music, again, as a player and as a composer, band leader, but also as an organizer. And eventually I convened an artist-run performance venue called Somewhere There.
Okay.
And I was so the founder and artistic director for 3 years, 2007 through 2010. And during that time, the space hosted literally thousands of artists, somewhere in the neighborhood of 850 performances.
Wow.
So by the end of my tenure, it was hosting live music every night. And and it was a real incubator for new projects, for new collaborations, also some touring musicians as well. So that was my most in-depth experience as a programmer. In 2010, I moved with my wife to Montreal, where I continue to reside, and focus more on playing and composing. And I've, so ever since then, I've been more focused on my work as a practicing artist. But recently, I've been more interested in getting back involved in programming and curating. And then the opportunity came up to apply to replace Ajay Heble, founding artistic director of the Jazz Festival here in Guelph. And then I got hired. And it feels like a good fit. And so I'm back about once a month to work on the festival, to meet with staff, meet with the board, meet with other people in the community who are invested in the event.
That's some commute, Montreal to Guelph, back and forth.
As a working artist, I'm used to traveling for work. And it doesn't overwhelm me. I get a lot of work done on trains.
I like the sound of that. And Montreal does have a connection to the Guelph Jazz Festival in particular through, I think it's through McGill that they're, or Concordia, one of the two, there's the, in terms of the academic portion of the Jazz Festival. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, that's correct. There is a philosophy professor there named Eric Lewis, who's also a practicing musician, someone with whom I play, in fact. And he is involved in the IC is an acronym for International Institute for the Critical Studies of Improvisation, or Critical Studies in Improvisation, which is housed in a number of institutions, with Guelph being the lead institution. And again, that's Ajay Heble's academic project.
Right.
I'm not involved in the academic stream, except to the degree that there's a colloquium that has historically been part of the Jazz Festival, and it is continuing. There's going to be a colloquium, but it's organized by IC, but there's some collaboration between my programming and theirs.
Right.
But beyond that, the connections with Montreal extend throughout the scene of musicians there.
Yeah.
Many Montreal musicians have performed in Guelph throughout its history, including people like Joanne Etu, Jean Derome, Pierre Tanguay, Marianne Trudel. And again, this year I've booked several Montreal artists and groups because they're great and because I get to hear them in my hometown, and I can vouch for that.
Right. Do the on-the-ground research there. So for people, I think we there's a lot of talk about when you talk about the Jazz Festival about improvised music. What is improvised music? What is jazz? And you mentioned you are a practitioner of creative improvised music.
Yep.
Which almost sounds like a double improv, a double creative. So maybe we could clarify some of those definitions.
At the risk of getting too theoretical, I have a very clear idea and concept of what I mean when I talk about creative music,
right?
Which isn't in contradistinction to uncreative music. I don't think such a thing exists.
Right.
It's in contradistinction, or at least along a continuum, with something I call recreative music.
Mm-hmm.
So in a situation of recreative music, I conceive of a group of musicians getting into a rehearsal space, working really hard to work out every problem so that when they go on stage, there are no surprises. They are recreating what they prepared.
Right.
I'm interested in all music, but I'm interested in particular in creative music, where some of the music making is left to the performance context.
Mm-hmm.
And typically that's done through improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
And so improvisation is a tool by which some of the music is brought to life, animated on stage in the presence of an audience who are to whatever degree involved in that process of creation and are allowed to experience it and hopefully enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. It almost sounds like, by saying that, there's no kind of rehearsal process, that there's no kind of practice at it. But in order to be really good at improvising, it's not part of it. Yeah, it's making it up on the spot. But part of it is knowing when and how to improvise as well.
Well, as a practicing artist, I'm both a composer and an improviser. And so that means, broadly speaking, I am asking myself at every point in the process, how much material needs to be prepared whether it's written out or whether it's rehearsed, and how much is left open to the creativity of the artists, including myself, on stage. And it depends on the project. It depends on the music. I would never say that it's somehow better not to prepare. I think music benefits from preparation. And as an artist, I do a lot of preparing so that the music is good. And I'm more interested in good music than I am in improvisation. Let's put it that way.
Right.
Improvisation just happens to be a tool by which some artists I really admire make their best music. By the same token, composition is another way other musicians or some of the same musicians make their best music. So when it comes down to it, I'm just looking for wonderful experiences, however they are conceived and created.
And this has always been a part of jazz.
That
That, you know, you go back and listen to something by, say, Jelly Roll Morton, and that recording might be the only version of that piece of music that he did because of the improvisation or the solo.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up Jelly Roll Morton, because he was a composer and perhaps the first great composer in the history of jazz. And it's debatable how much improvisation there really is in that music. Because if they were performing in a club, they might be playing the same tune six nights a week. And even if there's an improvised solo, improvisers often find solutions in the course of improvising a solo. And then they're going to maybe use that idea again the next night. And maybe they're going to be playing the same, essentially the same solo every night. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think Jelly Roll Morton's music is a testament to the fact that through improvisation you can create something, but it's not necessarily the spontaneity of it that makes it great. It's the musical outcome that's so beautiful.
Literally the first name that came to my head.
Well, it's a great example and food for thought for sure.
No, definitely. So in terms of what you do as artistic director for the Jazz Festival, what is your role there?
Obviously, it's picking artists and finding good contexts in which to present them. More broadly, it's thinking about the experience of a listener or different kinds of listener. What does the festival mean? How is it speak to somebody who is an expert music listener? Maybe I should put that in scare quotes. But somebody with a lot of experience listening to creative improvised music or just music in general.
Connoisseurs.
A connoisseur, thank you, yeah. And such people come to the Guelph Jazz Festival and travel huge distances because they like the programming. And so I'm thinking about what is a good experience for them. I'm also thinking what's a good experience for somebody who has never heard such music. And a lot of the music I'm programming is unconventional, maybe slightly challenging. I hope delightful for everybody. But Guelph historically has always been a context for adventurous creative improvised music under the heading of jazz. And so my job is to think about what that could mean, and also to think what it could mean as the festival develops over the coming years. This is my first festival. I'm new at this, although I've got lots of experience programming in general. So I'm really curious just to take the temperature of the thing, to feel how it feels in September, and then maybe make changes or improvements in my programming, and also in consultation with artists, with journalists, with other people who are involved in the field, because I can't know everything. People are giving me tips all the time about new music to listen to, new festivals to check out, new record labels, etc. And then there's a long list of other things that I do that are more administrative, that just go to the general operation of the festival, and also situating it in the community of Guelph, which includes a lot of sponsorships and a lot of relationships with businesses and organizations like CFRU, for example, who have a media sponsorship and a really good relationship. And so in a nutshell, that's what I do.
Is in terms of programming, is there like an overall sort of theme, like is it, in terms of maybe even specifically programming this year's festival, is there a band you really liked, but in terms of looking at this, the program overall, you're like, well, that doesn't fit? Or is there even room for that kind of like, I have this sort of set plan, but I also have this band and I can just put them in here because it might, you know, upset the program just enough to make people go, you know, that seems like a tricky balancing act.
It is, and my own wishes are only one factor. The biggest one, obviously, is budget.
Right.
There are lots of artists I would love to book, but I can't afford them. The ones I have booked, I'm delighted that I've been able to book them, and I think it's a balanced program. But to go back to the word that you brought up at the beginning of your question, theme, no, there's no overarching theme in my programming. However, I've been a listener, previously a board member, later on a performing artist as part of the Guelph Jazz Festival. So I have a lot of experience with the festival. I've always admired the programming, and I've learned a lot from Ajay Heble's example. At the same time, there are some artists that he's never booked in 23 festivals. And so pretty much as soon as I got the job, I started making a list of artists that I think are worthy that had never played, and a couple of them are prominently featured this year. So that alone will change the flavor of the festival artistically. Although my approach, and I think one of the reasons that the board of directors was willing to hire me is that I'm interested in both a sense of continuity, preserving the feel of the festival that Ajay and company have worked so hard to establish over the decades, but also to inject a bit of new energy and some new ideas. So that's the balancing act that I feel like I'm working toward.
I did want to ask about that because Ajay leaves a pretty big legacy and big shoes to fill. It was his festival for almost a quarter of a century. So aside from the high expectations you were talking about from connoisseurs, people who see the Guelph Jazz Festival as a trendsetter, it must be quite daunting to step into, and quite exciting too, to step into something like the Guelph Jazz Festival, which has had that one artistic voice for so long.
I have enormous respect for Ajay. He's my friend, and he's a role model in this field. But I'm not daunted. I take his example. I also take the example of other programmers and other festivals, because he's in a field of people doing important work, and I think it's a notable part of that field. But I take ideas from all over the place, and I take inspiration from all over the place. Now, obviously, stepping into the shoes of his directorship brings with it a certain set of expectations from community members and from longtime attendees at the festival. But the feedback has been really encouraging, and some people have said, I actually took a few years, I haven't been to Guelph in a few years, but I think this is the year I'm going to come back. So I hope they do, and I hope that my programming will draw some new listeners and some old listeners as well, and that it's a good experience for everybody.
Yeah, the presence of someone new sort of at the top can shake up the expectations.
I think so, yeah. Hopefully, like I said, a combination of new ideas and new energy, along with preserving a sense of continuity.
In terms of where that needle lies, though, when you stepped into this,
yeah,
what was the immediate thought? Was like, I have to take this year and sort of put my own stamp in order to, you know, make a statement and say I can do this job. and do it my own way, or because of that legacy and because of your respect for Ajay, to say I can follow in his example while doing little things to sort of move it into more of a direction that I want to take it in. What's that pressure like?
I think the pressure is probably the wrong word. I think practically speaking, I'm relatively inexperienced and I'm learning as we go. And a structure is in place. For example, last year's festival, and I have studied that festival in terms of logistics, like the selection of venues when concerts are taking place, and also the budget. And so I recognized my own inexperience, and so I structured this year's festival in terms of venues and schedule basically as a carbon copy of last year's.
Right.
So I didn't shake up those things very much. There are a few little changes here and there that I think are practical. But for the most part, it's the same as last year's. And then within those slots, I simply chose groups that I think are great. That's the fun part. I mean, I'm like a kid in a candy store at that point, because I get to book artists, obviously within the parameters I was describing before and the limitations. But I felt like I had a lot of freedom doing it. And I didn't feel in making those selections in any way inhibited by previous programming in the festival or really anything else. I was able to follow my own tastes and desires and delight, really. Yeah.
Well, you opened the door. You said that was the fun part. So what has been the not fun part?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm a pretty good administrator. A lot of independent artists have to be really good administrators. Balancing different kinds of work, creative work and administrative work, in order to execute different kinds of projects. So
And
pay the bills. So I've got the chops to do administration, but it's not the most fun thing that I do in my life. I'll admit that. But it is part of the job, and I readily embrace it in order to make a good festival. So that's it in a nutshell.
I had to ask. In terms of how the job has unfolded, has it gone about as much as you thought it would? Like, is it the job you thought you were taking on when you were hired? And maybe how has the job been different from what you were expecting?
I had not many expectations beyond those that were informed by my experience attending, working for, and playing at the festival. It's not a completely opaque situation for me to step into.
Sure.
The biggest thing, I think, with any new job is working with colleagues. In my case, I work directly day in, day out with the director of operations, Julie Hastings, and we're developing a working rapport. She's worked for a long time with Ajay, and they obviously had a very symbiotic relationship, and it's been great. I love working with Julie, but we're still learning how to work together. So that's something that's been unfolding as the last 4 months since I've been 5 months since I've been working on the festival. Yeah, and we'll continue to do so.
Does the fact that you're coming in and out of Montreal, does that have an effect on that as well, that developing that rapport?
Well, I've known Julie a long time. So whether we're talking on the phone or face-to-face or through email, if I were working in Guelph, chances are we'd be mostly talking on the phone and working through email anyway. I mean, I could duck into the office, but I'm here regularly enough that we can take care of the face-to-face stuff. I don't see my being in Montreal to be a huge barrier for our working together, no.
Interesting. And from what I understand, the Guelph Jazz Festival is the first time you've taken it upon yourself to tweet.
It's true. I had no social media. I guess I technically still don't, since I'm tweeting not from my own account, but from
the Jazz Festival.
It feels like Well, I know for a fact that the Guelph Jazz Festival Twitter account was underutilized in previous years.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like, and I've been discussing this with some colleagues, it seems like a good venue for the voice of the artistic director,
mm-hmm.
especially one who is like I am, moving from city to city, attending a lot of events,
mm-hmm.
In whether it's Montreal or Toronto or elsewhere, some of my own projects, not many of those, but mostly other groups that I'm going to hear, and to try to communicate broadly to people interested in creative improvised music, and also people in Guelph who are interested specifically in the jazz festival. And I don't know how to assess that. I'm still new at this game, but it feels good. It feels like the right thing to do, and I'm going to keep doing it. Facebook is, I haven't taken that plunge yet. I probably won't.
Well, it is nice to hear someone say they feel good about Twitter, because that's almost contraindicated these days.
More generally, maybe not, but in terms of my own role, it's okay.
I find this particularly interesting because I think a lot of people hear about the Jazz Festival. It's a big local event. It's one of the Fab Five, the five mm-hmm. sort of main festivals of Guelph that the city promotes. I do wonder sometimes, though, if it's inaccessible to people. And if you're just someone who maybe listens to the radio or listens to Spotify and, mm-hmm. and you just, you know, sort of get your music that way,
mm-hmm.
If jazz and improvised music and everything that the festival represents is maybe a bit of a monolith to some people, and how do you overcome that, or how are you trying to overcome that?
Tell me more about inaccessible. Do you mean stylistically, or?
Well, I mean, I think there's something that feels, the way we've been talking about it, it's improvised music and creative music, there's something that feels slightly more maybe academic to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like something more theoretical. Mm-hmm. Everybody likes learning how to play the musical instruments,
yeah.
but they perhaps don't enjoy so much the what's a treble clef and what how do you mark a middle C and, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. There's something about it that, from my experience when I was arts and culture editor mm-hmm. at the Ontarian, that was kind of my first time dipping into the jazz festival.
Sure, yeah.
There was something that felt, it didn't necessarily feel inaccessible to me, but it did feel like I was going into the deep end,
sure.
learning how to swim.
I think people are open to new experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I enter into programming and making music myself with that in good faith expectation or wish or hope. Because
mm-hmm.
As a listener, that's what I'm interested in. And I don't book music because it's technically advanced.
Right.
Some of it happens to be, mm-hmm. but those technical advancements, whatever that happens to mean, really, that's a contested space. But insofar as some of the music might be technically advanced, it's only as a means to make wonderful music.
Right.
And to create wonderful experiences. And especially to create wonderful experiences that are live.
Mm.
I mean, you mentioned Spotify, and I listen to a lot of recorded music. Most music fans do. But the real deal for me is the live experience, because what I was mentioning before, some of the music is going to be invented, created mm-hmm. in that room.
Right.
And to me, that is precious.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do I expect everyone to like the music that I program?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't possibly. By the same token, I don't know what accessible music is.
Right.
I've tried to listen to certain pop music
mm-hmm.
that I suppose you could call accessible. I can't access it.
Right.
I'm not, like, it's not, it doesn't capture me, doesn't capture me. I guess I could, if again in scare quotes, understand it. But I don't need to understand music. I don't think anyone else needs to understand music to have a wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope for wonderful experiences. I'd also add that a lot of the music played, for example, at the Market Square stage is...
Right.
Refers to different traditional and popular idioms,
right?
And is a lot of it is very danceable,
right?
And I think people will access the music through their feet as well by dancing to it. And I'm looking forward to that as well, since I love to dance.
Well, the Market Square, the tent for years, no matter where it's been set up downtown, I think that's always been the most popular part because, and maybe it's because it's just there in the open space and you can walk past and maybe get lured in by the music too. I do, to get back to the accessibility thing, what you said, you don't expect everyone to like the music, which is kind of, I almost wonder if that's maybe a turnoff in some way, because most musicians are in the business of getting people to like them. But in the context of the jazz festival, you, and I've had this conversation with Ajay in the past, it's like, you won't like everything. You might go to something and hate it, and that's okay, because someone else is going to like it too. And you might like something somebody else is going to hate. So I do wonder if maybe honesty and the candidness of that is maybe a root of that too, versus pop music, which is, I mean, you've mentioned you find a lot of pop music inaccessible.
No, I didn't say that. I say some.
I
love most pop music.
Okay. Yeah. But there's some you don't understand.
Yeah, I can't get into it. You know, that's what accessibility is.
Right.
It's the process of getting into something.
Okay.
I'm not going to name particular artists. I don't think it's useful to do so.
Sure.
And I would, just to go back to something you said in your comment about the job of most or all musicians is to get people to like them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, as a musician, I'm interested in good ideas.
Mm.
And that good idea might be an intellectual idea. It might be an emotional idea. It might be a physical idea, something danceable, for example. It might even be a spiritual idea.
Mm.
And I'm interested in people's ideas, whether I'm reading a book, whether I'm going to a piece of theater, whether I'm watching a film, or whether I'm going to a music concert.
Mm.
And sometimes I like the ideas. Sometimes I am, whether I like it or not, it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is there's something happening there. There's something to dig into. And so I'm interested in idea-rich music.
Mm.
And I underline that the nature of those ideas is multifaceted.
Mm-hmm.
And so liking is, it can be part of it, but it's not the be all and end all for the music that I make personally, and also the music that I book.
It could be, I'm thinking about it from the marketing side. I mean, Madonna might not care if you like her music, but certainly her record company does.
Well, yeah, then they're doing two different jobs.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe in the last couple of minutes here, you can outline some of the things that people can look forward to, and maybe some of the things you're looking forward to that you think is going to be a highlight at the festival. And that may be a long list, but
yeah, I'll try to pinpoint some things.
Sure.
I would also, before I do so, I would refer people to my own festival podcast,
mm-hmm.
In which I talk about the different artists and play their music at some length. So mm-hmm. that's a Guelph Jazz Festival 2017 podcast, which is accessible through the Guelph Jazz Festival website and also SoundCloud and iOS podcast app. But I would, in terms of ticketed events, I would point people first and foremost to Saturday, the 16th of September at Cooperators Hall, which is a double bill featuring the Cooperative American Trio Bass Trombone. Ray Anderson is a monster trombone player, and he's just incredible. And they're all fantastic players, but it's the fact that they've got this band, and it's Ray Anderson on trombone, Mark Helias on bass, and Jerry Hemingway, a longtime friend of the festival, on drums.
Mm-hmm.
And they write these beautiful pieces. Each of them writes for it. The music is smart, but it swings like crazy. Like it's a real jazz trio, but it's adventurous. I heard them in Montreal 2 weeks ago, and it was just delightful. So they're playing the second half of a double bill with a Montreal band called Mendham, led by violinist Josh Zubat. And Josh, sadly for those of us in Montreal, moved to Vancouver last autumn. But leading up to his departure, he was rehearsing and playing with and recording Mendham extensively. And so I'm trying to capitalize on a lot of that energy. And this band, it's
they're going to give bass trombone a run for their money in terms of swing, in terms of energy, and in terms of chops. So it's really exciting to have a emerging. Josh is established, but he's quite a bit younger than the bass trombone guys. So a younger Canadian group on a double bill with a more experienced American trio. Mm. The night before that, there's quite different approaches to music making. The first half of the double bill, also at Cooperators Hall on the 15th of September, is the international trio of John Butcher, who's a British saxophone player, Matthew Shipp, who's an American pianist, and Thomas Lane from, well, he's German, but he lives in Vienna, who plays analog synthesizer. And they're responsible for, to my taste, one of the best records of open improvisation, group composing, whatever you want to call it, in the last couple of years. And I was just, when I heard the music, I was just shocked. And what was really interesting is the way they really managed to create beautiful, intelligible forms. It's quite structured. And then the way they open that those structures up through their very distinct instrumentation is just tremendously exciting. And they're on a double bill with a band from Vancouver, an octet led by cellist Peggy Lee, who's written a suite of pieces animated by sections of open improvisation inspired by the HBO series Deadwood. The writing is very cinematic in nature, and she conceives of the improvising as sort of characters in a story storyline that relates loosely to the narratives of Deadwood.
Wow.
So those are two of the ticketed concerts that are pretty exciting to me. At Market Square Stage, the Saturday night closing party is a group from Montreal called the Gypsy Cumbia Orchestra, which is a 15-piece ensemble of musicians and dancers that combine South American percussion and rhythms with brass band traditions from Eastern Europe. And they have a monthly residency at a venue near to where I live called Sala Rosa, and it is sort of ground zero for partying once a month, and people dance and they love it. This band is really great. I've just recently booked another group that's based in Montreal, but the lead singer, the leader of the project, is from he's Congolese.
Okay.
Congolese Quebecois.
Okay.
His name is Pierre Quenders, and he combines hip hop and R&B with Congolese rumba, which is a really tremendous synthesis. So he's bringing his quartet, and they're going to play before the Gypsy Cumbia Orchestra.
Okay.
And then on the Friday night, the closing act is the Pocket Brass Band, which is a band led by Ray Anderson, who's playing the next night in the ticketed event with bass trombone.
Right.
And it's his party band. So from New York, so it's trumpet, trombone, sousaphone, and drums. And they play music sort of inspired by, completely inspired by New Orleans brass band traditions, but they're killer soloists and a heck of a lot of fun. So those are some of the acts that are really I'm really juiced about for this year's programming.
Great. And if people want to see that schedule, if they want to learn more, buy tickets, how can they do that?
GuelphJazzFestival.com. And so there's all that you just mentioned, a complete schedule, artist profiles, and the means by which to buy tickets.
Well, great. Scott Thompson, thanks so much for stopping by today. And I think there's going to be a lot of people looking forward to seeing what you can do with the Jazz Festival coming up.
Well, thanks a lot, Adam. It's a real pleasure to speak today.
And once again, that was Scott Thompson, the Artistic Director of the Guelph Jazz Festival. For the full list of events and performers for this year's festival, go to GuelphJazzFestival.com. And while you're there, you can also buy tickets for select Jazz Festival concerts. The Guelph Jazz Festival in Colloquium takes place from September 13th to 17th. And that's it for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. There is a Guelph Politico Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And you can donate to the Guelph Politico Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we'll have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.